Coming up on this week's Redcast.
Information, the data that one will have in order to catch somebody doing it is growing exponentially. DeFi wants to play in this market, and consumers want to play in this market as well. Then they're going to have to up their game and realize that there are massive hurdles to entry.
We see a big gap currently between the digital native companies and the TradFi world, and we need to close that gap so we can learn from each other. I see demand from the institutional user base to say, we need to have more clarity, we need to have guidance, we need to have regulation. Being engaged doesn't mean that it's a negative thing. It can be also a very positive thing, because regulator policymakers will want to hear from the industry about what we think is the right things to do.
I want everybody to ensure that their algorithms are absolutely properly tested. You can write off a lot of other people's businesses if you're not careful. And that's why the regulators are so concerned about this.
There's just as much a making money aspect to this one than the fear of some of those fines. And you know, yes, we can need to demonstrate those controls because of the market, but there's alpha there as well. So one of the things that excites me about this conversation is we can think about baking compliance in, we bring the cost down, we bring the profit up, everybody's happy.
Welcome to Redcast.
Redcast.
Shining a light on challenges and opportunities for digital compliance.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's season 2, episode 18. I'm PJ DiGiamarino, CEO and founder of JWG. And I'm really pleased to be bringing you another episode of Trading Redcast. So we have a lot to talk about on this one, and it gets a bit granular, but in a nutshell, you know, when MiFID II went in on the 1st of January, 2018, there was a big new ask around how you control the algorithmic trading or the microstructural controls that the regulators talked about back then. It wasn't just the firms putting in the controls, it was also the venues that had to put these in. And they looked to actually minimize the amount of disruptive trading that happened, any kind of correlations and flash crashes like we experienced a decade ago. In May this year, an errant trade in London actually sparked another flash crash. And that really kind of raised a question in our minds, well, what's actually going to be happening, not just with MiFID II being rewritten into MiFID III, but what does this mean for digital assets as well? Because we really now have an environment where MiCA will be coming in parallel with some of these other changes. And we see this digitally native theme really coming to the fore, because the more you can get intelligence codified, the better we can actually make sure we comply. And we avoid the $920 million fine, which one of the big banks has actually taken in the US a couple of years ago. So I think the question for the group is, how does RegTech help align the digital interests of everyone now involved in the trading environment? I'm really keen to hear what they say about this in the run-up to our conference, which is the 9th and 10th of November, which you'll get details on soon. But anyway, without further ado, Stefan, welcome back to RegCast. Can you just give everyone a quick introduction?
Yes, thank you for the invitation. My name is Stéphane Malray. I'm the head of market structure and innovation at ING Bank. I look after market structure analysis, which is working with the regulator, policymaker, and central banks. And the innovation piece is how we work with fintech company to use them, invest in them, or partner with them.
And those of you who have listened to RegCast before probably heard Stefan talking about digital assets. You want to just explain the role you play in the number of the digital asset committees, Stefan?
Yeah, so we are looking at this space quite closely for many years when there was a digital ledger technology was starting to be implemented in the capital market world and how those technology could be used. So ING was starting in those experiments probably 5 or 6 years ago. And then from that, we learned quite a lot, but we also saw the rise of pure digital asset technology companies trying to go into the institutional world. And this is a space we are quite interesting to look at as well at present.
Fantastic, thank you. Sam, welcome back. Everyone knows you're a lawyer. Tell us something we don't know.
That being a TradFi lawyer, involved in market structure on a macro and a micro level is impossible anymore without a significant involvement or interest in DeFi, because the worlds are colliding. And as part of, it's not even a revolution, an evolution of both of them. TradFi is becoming more innovative, and DeFi is becoming more traditional and stick in the mud. So I have a feet in both camps.
Excellent perspective. Thank you. And last but certainly not least, Nick, welcome back. Why don't you introduce folks what you do?
Sure. I'm Nick Edelson. I'm technical director of TraderSurf, and we provide tools for testing algorithms of contribution to market disorder to emulate the whole ecosystem that the algorithms would be trading with live, and to pass them in a single pass for pass or fail them for contribution to market disorder. My background is in being in black box since the 1980s. So there we go. Was trading the original program trading crash in the 1980s. That's a long time ago now.
Oh wow, you're one of the first people to break stuff. Good. Well, you can tell us a lot about this. All right, let's move to the first of our three questions. And I think the really, Stefan, it comes to you on this one. What market controls are really under the regulatory microscope today in both the TradFi world and then as you see them evolving into digital assets?
So there are quite a lot of control since MiFID got implemented in terms of transaction reporting, transparency, but also, as you said, for execution of algorithm, how do we test them, how do we program them, how do we release them into production, how the different trading venue are also looking at them. And so for existing products, I think there are a set of controls were set and used by the industry and well understood now for many years. The challenge come for this new asset class. If you want to trade some of the digital assets, what are the existing regulatory frameworks that you have? This is where there is more uncertainty. So of course you can use what you know and what you have today and try to use those different controls. So this is probably what most of the TradFi company like us will do. But what you see also from the other side, from the crypto native companies, have a very different way to look at things. And they probably don't have the same experience that we have from the different crash that we saw in the last 20 years or 30 years. So we have to be extremely careful when we play on that count to say, what do we bring from the left side to the right side, or what should we learn from one side to the other?
What's the big difference between the two sides? Start, you know, if you look at the last 20 years, how much of that is applicable to what we have to do now for the new assets?
So if I go back to some of the example, it's on the electronification of the equity market, the FX market, the fixed income market. We learn a lot when there's a crisis, rapid price movement, interventions from government, where the systems have to be able to react very quickly or to be stopped or to be paused, right? So some of the regulation make sure that you can have a panic button, that you are really ready to stop your algorithm to go crazy on the market. Others are making sure that in a rapid evolution of prices, your algo can learn itself or can pose itself from the market. We don't see a lot of those controls from the newcomer on those venue, right? So because they didn't see those extreme events, they are not regulated the same way as we are. So they still have to learn from that.
Sam, this must not be much of a surprise from your perspective. What's your perspective?
No, it's absolutely no surprise at all. The biggest challenge, I feel, that the DeFi space is going to have to wrestle with is the acceptance that as it matures, as it reaches the the thresholds of use and compatibility with the TradFi world, the clients that it wants to onboard, the likes of Stefan's company and the rest of them, is it's going to have to be an acceptance that they're in a regulated space. If they're not directly authorized and regulated themselves, their clients are going to be looking to them to assist the clients in complying with their direct regulatory obligations. And what I was going to say, as far as looking at market controls and challenges currently is concerned, is the market's getting bigger, as in the number of the number and types of participants that are playing in the markets, the ways in which all of these participants can access the markets and get burned by them, and the instruments, products, whatever it is, securities that are being traded on these markets is expanding exponentially. And that's a hint to me to why, particularly in the UK, but we're seeing it emerge in places like Ireland, and from there it'll be into the rest of the EU, is a holistic view of harm. The markets are no longer wholesale and retail. The dividing line is closing and if not disappearing completely. So what those who are already authorized and regulated, like Stefan's firm, will need to deal with is the fact that they will be subject to rules which would otherwise previously have affected only those who had direct retail punters.
So it's a lot bigger, it's faster, it's more interconnected and complicated, yeah. And therefore those controls really now start to matter from an authorization perspective.
Correct. And into Nick's world, it's what we're going to have to look at as far as market stability, fair and orderly markets, and also your ability to disrupt or manipulate markets. The opportunities for doing that are becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. And the chances, the information, the data that one will have to have in order to catch somebody doing it is growing exponentially.
Yeah. So Nick, I guess in my preamble, I pulled out a couple examples about where things didn't go so well, but you deal a lot more frequently with the actors in the market that are doing their testing and controls. What are you finding? Are they gearing things up for this bigger, more complicated world?
Yes, they are. The example we talked about earlier was spot foreign exchange algorithms being covered by outside MiFID II, but now being the net being extended across them by the firms because they're such a big input into the other algorithms. But there's all sorts of things going on. I think it's something that people don't understand is the markets are a very large non-linear system. And what that means is you get lots of very nasty effects where you can get amplifications very quickly blowing up from very small. So if you think about it, what's under the market, we're often asked what is algo market manipulation? And there are a number of general principles set out under the market abuse regulation, for instance, overloading or destabilizing an order book, doing something that creates misleading effect on information. There are a number of those, and then there are some very specific examples. But one of these that where you think you've just caused a small problem, that can blow up and it can spread across the markets. We're doing an analysis at the moment of the May the 2nd flash crash, and we're looking at the way the contagion spread across Europe from the where the uncontrolled orders were going out through the improperly tested algorithm, and how other people responded. So other people were contributing to market disorder, making it worse, and it was amplifying out into the other markets. And of course, you get to some extent saved by the circuit breakers. But as we found, even back in 2015, in the famous ETF flash crash, that means that all these index-based instruments are then completely mispriced, and they may never get themselves back, or in theory, they might never get back to being at the correct prices. So you've got this very long period of being everything being maladjusted and potentially getting worse and worse. And these things can blow up. And I mean, if you go back to the very early days of these program trading crashes, you know, everybody knew, the humans knew what was going on wasn't right, but nobody could stand in the way of the wall of money that was suddenly flowing at you. So it was, it is very, very risky. And that's something that it makes it, it's beholden on everybody to ensure that their algorithms are absolutely properly tested. You know, it's not now just a question of somebody becoming Knight Capital and writing their, you know, writing their own business off. You can write off a lot of other people's businesses if you're not careful. And that's why the regulators are so concerned about this.
Yeah, it doesn't fit well with the traditional compliance mindset of, I'm going to do a RICSA or an operational risk assessment once a year. Right. Tell us about what's really different in this kind of environment with your, from your platform point of view.
Sure. So when you're testing an algorithm, obviously, when you're building the algorithm, you do your normal back testing. Hopefully, you put some decent risk controls in at the sort of macro level. But what you've got to do is to ensure that when other algorithms are misbehaving in the market, you don't contribute to market disorder. That's the rule in Europe. You mustn't contribute. So in order to do that, you've got to trade into some sort of dynamic system and see how your orders further move the market and that they don't make it worse. And you also have to have a way of measuring that. And the price movement alone, price movement isn't very stable. You'd have to run these tests millions of times to get useful information. But there's actually other ways of looking at the way you interact with the market, which can result in you determining whether the way you're interacting with the market is contributing to market disorder. So that can be done in a single pass. And that's something that we worked on with the regulators over a number of years.
Right. So I guess, Stefan, looping back to your role, you always have an eye on the horizon. I'm sure you've spotted all these AI conversations going on. Bank of England just released one last week, but effectively starting to look at, well, is the general approach to AI, how fair things are, who's liable for what, how do you strength test what you're doing there? Is that starting to now reinforce some of what we've done already for things like MiFID II, or is it going to start forcing us to unwind or amplify it somehow?
I think it's a mix of both, because in one way, there is the realization that data is getting more and more important in the way we do business with our clients, and that algorithmic trading automation is growing rapidly across different asset classes, right? A lot of the algo trading activity was on the equity market for many years, and then we saw it happening in the FX market. Now we see it happening in the fixed income market, in the currency, in the commodities market, and probably in the digital asset space. It's growing pretty fast as well. So we see that role of data being more important. We see that the role of AI in this world is probably not as used as we see in other industries. So we can still learn a lot to deploy AI model to the next level. And that's why I start with data, because until you get a good set of data, you get historical data that you can manipulate, standardized, see, as Nick was saying, the cross-asset component of one algo can destroy the other algo or can impact on other asset class. So the data layer is the most important one. And I think we're not where we should be. The AI level, it will be the next step where I think there is still a lot of work to do. We're still doing stuff there. I think it's not that nothing is happening in AI in the world, but I think it's, you know, version 1, 2, or 3, but not version 6, 7, and 8. So we need to accelerate that to be able to really get the value that we could get from the AI model.
I definitely hear that, and it fits with a lot of the conversations I've been seeing. But to what extent does that need to get accelerated for digital assets and this whole notion of a self-regulatory organization or some standards or codes of conduct and those kind of things? Are those starting to now put some pressure on the whole question of how do we document what we do?
Yes, and to go back to Nick's example, SpotFX is not a financial product, but there is this global code of conduct was pushed by central banks a few years ago, 5 years ago, and now widely adopted by the FX industry to be able to, in a way, give guideline and guidance around strong principle how to trade in a SpotFX. And algo trading is being part of it. It's included as well and complements what MiFID II is doing there. And I think for digital asset, which is currently not heavily regulated, this is the other area where starting with a code of conduct could be the first step to be able to adopt those standards and to make sure we speak the same language and we monitor the same way. You know, we see a big gap currently between the digital native companies and the TradFi worlds, and we need to close that gap so we can learn from each other, you know, and help each other, because both sides wants to trade with the other one for sure.
And so, how much do you close that gap next year? What's the objective for 2023 in your view?
I think what is very interesting and good news is that there is now focus from regulator and policymaker on that topic. And you know, if you were going to ask me that question 5 years ago or even 3 years ago, it you know, the answer for them that it's not our problem or it's not our mandate, we're not supposed to look at that. Now I think we move to an area where they understand that it's going to impact the existing user base. You know, the notion of care, as I'm always saying, is very important. Is they're going to see that people get hurt by trading those instruments because they are very volatile. So they are looking at it. And I think 2023 will be, and we see with the MiCA regulation starting in Europe, but the interest in the UK side, the interest in Asia as well, that and in the US, of course, that regulators are going to work on it, and they are going also to collaborate on this front. So I'm quite optimistic that 2023 will be the year that we start to see you know, the road going in the right direction, and we can help in making sure that and there is demand. So on top of that, it's not that a lot of time we complain that you know, regulation is costly and difficult to implement, and we don't want to have over-regulation. But in that space, I see demand from the institutional user base to say, we need to have more clarity, we need to have guidance, we need to have regulation, so we don't blow the market.
So we can now have a much more clear view of where the road goes, but also get the people onto the road to start taking the journey together. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. Sam, Stefan hit on duty of care in the context of the AI and fairness, and people not getting hurt conversation. Thank you for tagging me on a recent article you put out, you know, on that topic. How do you come at this and thinking about protecting those consumers?
Well, I have to be honest, consumers and retail are not my primary passion. They get dragged into it because of what I said earlier, which is the line between wholesale and retail, and the harm that can be done is narrowing completely, and markets are becoming a primary and secondary markets across all instruments, complex and non-complex, are becoming available to everybody. So I'm coming at it not particularly from a how do consumers avoid harm perspective, but what following on from what Stefan was saying, what I'm wondering is whether there is going to be a next step or an interim step, perhaps, following MiCA and SMCR and the culpability of big players in this market. Which step is, you know, we are not going to allow this particular product or this particular company or player in the market. That is no longer allowed. Or to say that if that is what you want to do, you're going to have to be authorized and regulated. We've seen hints of it with Binance and other companies where they've been told, or their consumers have been told, that in their jurisdiction, that company, they can interact with it, but they won't be protected. I think that's a backdoor way of ensuring that products and services offered to the consumers who are your voters, as well as your your immediate market participants, are protected. And I think, you know, there are a lot of reasons why that works. It helps, I think, from Stefan's perspective, where he's wrestling with an exceedingly heavily regulated, both from a prudential regulation is not to be underestimated, is exceedingly expensive to run an investment firm or a bank or a an MTF, an OTF, or a regulated trading venue. The obligations to test on deployment, pre-deployment, on deployment, after deployment, and change manage your algorithms is an exceedingly complex process that is expensive, that should not be underestimated, as Nick, I can attest. And I can as well, for acting on the algo investors, the algo traders. If DeFi wants to play in this market and consumers want to play in this market as well, then they're going to have to up their game and realize that there are massive hurdles to entry. And once you're there, there are significant continuing obligations. That's where I think it should play out over the next year or so. And I think it will.
Good. Well, you and Stefan will both be on that road. We'll see where it goes together. Nick, what's your perspective?
Yeah, two things. First of all, AI, of course, gives you an immediate problem in that you have to retest algorithms on every significant change. AI may be making all sorts of change. If you're letting the true automated AI go ahead, the algorithm could be changing significantly at any time and you may not realize. So that makes the testing very challenging. I think there's something very important to look at here, which is the ESMA just did the MiFID II algo review, and they are proposing to have a second additional review because they were unhappy with the answers on algo testing. Everybody wrote back to say, yeah, the algo testing's great, it's completely fit for purpose, we're doing it all. And so ESMA said, that's interesting, how are you doing it? And nobody had an answer. So that didn't impress people, and they're doing another review specifically of testing for contribution to market disorder, in particular disorderly trading conditions, and they in fact they quote in their paper that they see a need to enhance consistency and comparability of results obtained by different investment firms, and they're going to amend RTS6 to a principle-based testing regime. They were also very concerned that people hadn't read RTS7. I know it only directly applies to people running trading venues, but as the shadow rapporteur for MiFID II said when it came in, it's all firms should be reading all parts of MiFID II. And just because it was a trading venue's duty to apply it to their members, the members should have known. Here we are at what is normally the five-year review point. And, as we're writing, a number of investment firms seem to be unaware of their obligations. That's not a good thing to see.
Just a word to stick up for the industry there. With 1.8 million paragraphs as of the 1st of January 2018 that we all loaded into our RegDelta system, you know, it's just a minefield and a half, and claiming everybody's supposed to bread everything. Yeah, good luck with that. So it doesn't surprise me a lot of this we're coming back around on again. Yeah. So we need to move those closing statements. Nick, we'll come back to you at the end. But Stefan, what's the one thing, one takeaway you would leave from this conversation for those that should come register and see you at the conference on the 9th of November?
Well, I think there's a few things that were important, and I hope this conference will help to address is what we discussed today, it's quite complex. You know, it's a quite a big scope. There is still a lot to learn from it. So you know, exchanging, talking to people, listening to conferences will help to bring that level of understanding much higher. But on top of that, I want to leave probably with a optimism and hope that this is a very good time to get engaged. This is a very good time to develop new products. This is a very good time to shape how the regulation will help us to trade those new instruments. So being engaged doesn't mean that it's a negative thing. It can be also a very positive thing, because regulator policymakers will want to hear from the industry about what we think is the right things to do. So, you know, if people join in November, that will be to learn, but also to drive that change in the future.
Well said. Thank you, Sam.
I echo that completely. Stefan took some of those words straight out of my mouth. Apart from that, which I think is exceedingly important to play a part in what happens next, is for us to be able to demonstrate to attendees just how interconnected all of this is, and to use that horrible phrase, holistic, the markets are now and will become increasingly so.
Amen to that, Nick.
Yes, absolutely. And that's both Stefan and Sam there. That's exactly right. Engaging with the regulators is absolutely key. We've been doing that since 2003 and spend a lot of our time doing so. Beyond that, it's very important to learn from other people, to see where these issues are coming up, what is really best practice in testing algorithms and extending these algorithms out into new crypto spaces, and looking at what can go wrong, learning from people and understanding what the penalties are, but understanding how to avoid them as well. I think that's extremely important.
Yeah, and I guess for me, all these stories, especially in the trading space, come down to one of two things: making money, staying out of jail. And I think there's just as much a making money aspect to this one than the fear of some of those fines. And you know, yes, we can need to demonstrate those controls because of the market, but there's alpha there as well. So one of the things that excites me about this conversation is we can think about baking compliance in, we bring the cost down, we bring the profit up, everybody's happy. So without further ado, gentlemen, thank you very much for participating on this RegCast. We'll put all the links in the show notes to the various articles and the things that were mentioned. But very much looking forward to having you on the 9th and 10th of November. It's on demand for 6 months. So please register and look forward to continuing this dialogue then. And if you like what you heard, please rate and review us. It helps others find us as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You can download the podcast via Spotify, Apple, and Google. But also, I'd encourage people to come to the JWG website, which, as hopefully you will know, is jwg-it.eu. Go to the Intelligence Hub and create your bespoke library.